Welcome to Eating Consciously, a podcast hosted by Moving to Conservers, a grassroots group in Transylvania County, North Carolina. We enjoy building community through study, conversation, and local action. The goal of Eating Consciously is to learn together the impact our food choices have on others. You can learn more at movingtoconservers.com. Thanks for being here.
My name is Kim Corum, and I am producer of this podcast.
Today's guest is Jackie Edens of Roosterhead Farms. Today's host is Shane Bellinger, owner of Green Go Cleaning Company. This is our third podcast in the series. The first was with Evan Parker, who is a vegan and has an incredible knowledge on the topic. It was a very informative interview, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. Our second interview was with Naima Muhammad of the North Carolina Environmental Justice Network. She spoke about industrial meat farms. And honestly, I can't eat meat from those again after hearing her. And she spoke about so much more, systemic racism and all of the fights that she's been involved in. Thank goodness. This third one is about a different kind of farming, and I hope you enjoy the show.
Hi everyone, this is Shane, and I am here with Jackie Edens of Roosterhead Plantation, and we are going to be talking a little bit about her small farm. I want to call it small, but it's really not that small.
No.
So, hi Jackie.
What's up, guys? So let's talk a little bit about the name. We are now Roosterhead Farms. First, I'd maybe like to introduce myself. My name's Jackie Edens. We were formerly Roosterhead Plantation. We changed it to Farms. The reasoning for our name is we have a very interesting story about my husband needed to process a rooster, and we had a small homestead and we had no name, and we lived on a 140-acre pine plantation that never had humans living on it, by the way, but it just had pines, and they call those a pine plantation on the coast. And he went to process this and throw the parts that were inedible into the marsh for the wildlife to have. And on that night we had a blood moon, and it washed the rooster's head back into my driveway right before a play date. And some children arrived and started screaming, "Roosterhead, Roosterhead, Roosterhead." So my friend leaned into me and said, "You were looking for a farm name. Roosterhead it is." So we went with that forever and ever. And then we decided that maybe we should change it because it does give people that idea about plantation, even though it wasn't that kind of plantation. So we switched it to Farms as we lease several properties in Transylvania County.
So you guys are now Roosterhead Farm.
Farms.
Farms. Okay. Yep. So Roosterhead Farms.
Yes.
Okay. That's good to know.
And, maybe we'll get into a little bit about how we started our farm. So in 2008, I was working a really terrible job in retail, and I would have 16-hour shifts. I was pregnant with my daughter, and I started getting sick during my pregnancy, and I couldn't figure it out. I would pack my lunch, I would pack my breakfast, I'd pack a dinner, but on a 16-hour shift, that's just not enough food. So I would eat out. If somebody went to McDonald's, okay, grab me just one double cheeseburger. Oh, if something, you know, this and this. Well, I had my daughter in 2008, and by 2011, I was severely sick and barely able to work. I was tested and I had type 2 diabetes, which does run on both sides of my family, but it does not run that early in life. I was 30 years old. It does not run that early in life. Most people in my family get it in their 60s or whatever, pretty typical. And basically I had been eating the SAD diet, the standard American diet, and that changed my DNA forever. I had to stop working. My husband was working full time as a fire marshal at the time. And I said, "What would you think if we just had a small garden?" So we had a small garden and we started raising chickens, and we were homeschooling the kids. I stayed at home. the medicine that I was on, which is metformin, which is like very popular, I continued to get sicker and sicker and sicker on it. I was on a hormone pill because I could no longer have periods because I had was polycystic ovarian syndrome, which was not hereditary in my family. And that usually is a hereditary disease, but somehow I magically got it from eating badly. And I didn't really understand, but once I started raising my own meats and raising my own fruits and vegetables, within about a year and a half's time, I no longer needed to be on the medicine. And then in a year and a half from there, by the time I was 35, I no longer had diabetes or PCOS. So I still have tumors on my parathyroid. And after diabetes, I was left with something called G6PD, which means that I have an intolerance to certain spices and certain things. But because I changed the way that I ate only and started being outside more, I was able to get rid of a disease that I was told that I would die from.
And how old were you at that point?
31 when I started to change what I was eating and how we were raising animal, like how we were, instead of getting like beef from just anybody, I decided to start getting beef from someone I knew and I could put eyes on the actual animal. Or instead of going to a store and buying this beautiful squash, I started raising my squash and eating the ugly ones. Or, you know, so I just had to start changing. So that kind of just started our homestead and our mini farm. But then we moved to Western North Carolina, where my husband is from. My husband's name is Jay Edens. Most of you know him. He was a fire marshal for Hendersonville. And then, you know, we were living on family land at the time. And he just came home and he was like, what would you think if we just started our farm? And it was like our only business. And I said, all right, let's do this. So he quit. He gave us 2 weeks notice and we just started farming on his grandparents' land. First year we had 9 CSAs. We're up to a 30-person CSA in our third year. And we have a small farm store on property. We've changed locations a couple of times, but that's how it goes when you lease property, which I feel is the best way to farm. And one day we'll have a forever farm. But for right now, this is basically, but our whole thing is regenerative ag. So it's not only sustainable to do regenerative ag and small scale, it's profitable, it's better for everybody. Interesting fact, the Transylvania County, I don't know what they're called. It's the Bird Association, where they look at birds and the bird watchers.
I'm not sure.
Go birding. They used to come on this property and go back to the cornfield, but now we have brought so many different types of new birds in by having such a diverse ecosystem with different species of animals and plants that now they're able to watch birds up front.
Did this used to be just corn?
This whole property in the 90s used to, this was a home where the chimney is. There used to be a home. These were in the 50s and 60s. These were the middle manager's houses for Acosta. And then this house was built by a man named Dills, and he built it for Mo McCall. And then they, as my understanding, I'm not sure about that. I know neither of those gentlemen. I only know Dills. And then the Carters bought it, and they had a few small animals in a garden. But back in the back used to all be, most of this land in Transylvania County used to be green beans and tomatoes. So there's still a lot of tomatoes, but now it's more corn and soy. So in the back part of the property, there's corn that somebody monocrops. And then up here, we have our 8 acres of diversified regenerative ag, where we move the animals daily or weekly, depending on what kind they are. And we have about 12 different species on property.
Including pigs,
chickens, turkeys, several varieties of chickens, bees.
Now you have cows?
A cow.
Dogs,
cats. We have lots of little mice. All these swallows, birds, you know, all kinds of things now that didn't used to be on this property. But, you know, animals want to move away from city, and this was trying to be integrated into the city, but we are still in county. So that's basically what happened there.
Interesting. So you guys also grow some vegetables,
yes,
right?
So,
and flowers?
Yep, flowers. We have a whole quarter acre of just wildflowers that are North Carolina indigenous. And we just leave those up for the bees. They have not grown very well this year as it's a wet year, but we've just left it kind of wild. We have several varieties. We stopped bush hogging and weed eating and cutting down the sides of Lamb's Creek there, which, you know, people before us on this property would sometimes do. And we stopped doing that. We found out that there were 7 varieties of grape leaves, you know, that are edible, and blackberries and all of these different things. I have people come here, just drive up and ask me, can they forage for their wedding flowers? Because there's so many varieties of indigenous wildflowers. So
pretty cool.
Oh yeah.
So can you maybe like explain a little bit more about your about your farming practices for us people who are not farmers?
Yes. So we only have 8 acres, and we have thousands of animals on this 8 acres. The way that we're able to do that is by rotating them. We have one semi-permanent paddock up front where like we'll put the dogs and the sheep up at night, but everybody is allowed to rotationally graze. And so we don't have a problem with like people call and ask, can I buy some manure from you? We won't have that. We won't have manure for sale because it goes directly into the ground. So all of our animals are in like an animal train. It's basically like, you know, the meat birds are going, and behind them are egg layers and pigs and sheep and cows. The cows mow down the top of the grass, and the sheep come behind that. And then behind that, you know, you have everybody down the line, and eventually you have this nice aerated soil that the pigs have tilled up, the chickens have scratched through the pigs' feces, and there's no mites or bugs. The turkeys, geese, ducks, they take care of a lot of like ticks and things. But essentially that is just so that, my husband always jokes, he's a grass farmer, because it's really about being able to use the carbon that they're putting out and into that soil, and being able to use the water. This property gets overrun with water. We have not had a massive flood. Last year we had a 500-year flood, and if there had been more pasture, it might have sequestered a lot of that water and saved a lot of time and businesses on this property. So we used to have like a mud pit behind our tiny house, and now it's full of different varieties of grasses. So what we did was we just put chickens on it, and then after chickens we ran pigs behind it, and after that we ran more chickens and sheep, and then it just kind of allowed grasses to come back. And the pigs, you know, they till it up for you. And so it allows the soil to grow. I mean, it allows the soil to get air in it, and it's tilled up naturally. And these pigs are not doing like our work for us. This is what pigs do in the wildlife. Like, this is like, you know.
It sounds like the perfect ecosystem.
It is. And ancient Egyptians always used pigs. They would start at the Nile. By the flood season, they would be back up to the city. They would overseed, the pigs would eat the seed, poop it out already fertilized, and use their cracked hoof to split the seed and push it into the ground. So it's already a speedier process. It's already fertilized for you. It's already in tilled soil that they did themselves, and you literally do nothing but walk behind them.
So the difference between that practice and factory farming, they're coming, they're just...
There's maybe a lot of, so factory farming to me is like, say you have 10 acres and you've split it into 2 paddocks, but you have 150 cows, and then you need a place to store all the grain to feed them because you're going to run out of pasture very quickly. So you have this dirt lot that just has animals, and then there's poop everywhere, and then you got to get rid of the poop, and then, you know, there's just a lot of It saves you manpower. What we do is very hard. We have to wake up every morning. It takes us about an hour to do chores, and we move people, we move the animals, and we talk to them, and we're walking with them. But it's better for the animal, and it's better for the environment, and they have fresh, we have yet to feed our sheep. They eat from the pasture.
The We're land on just eight feeds them.
Yes.
On 8 acres.
You on can 8 acres. Feed. And part of the 8 acres is the 2 acres up front that the store is on. That's
not, you're not
that's
even not using even, it.
Yeah, that we don't even put animals on. So it's just very interesting, which we would if it wasn't so close to a highway. It's just very interesting because pigs love to be in a forest. They love to be on a tree line. They love to be in a pasture. But in America, we always say happy as a pig in mud, but every other country has the same happy as a pig in clover. We're the only ones that say happy as a pig in mud. Pigs like mud, but they don't want to live in mud. That's not...
They like the grass.
Yeah. Chickens like wood chips, sawdust, peat moss, all kinds of things, but they don't want to just live on only that. They want to get outside and touch the ground.
Well, we're talking right now, and I've at least seen 9 chickens passed right by me. So they're just, you tell me every time I come, you know, the chickens can go to Mississippi if they want to.
Yeah. And we do have protective fencing. We use that, as Joel Salatin calls it, space age netting, but it's not really space agey. It's just, you know, we have a small charger on an electric net. It does not bother the birds. I had 3 ducks just walk right through it like nothing even happen. Their feathers, it prevents them from being zapped, but the idea is that it will deter a skunk or a coyote or a raccoon, a possum. You know, when we tried to give them some sort of covered shelter so that they can get away from, we have bald eagles here, we have peregrine falcons, we have several varieties of hawks on the property. We try to keep all of, you know, the animals safe. So they have a open space with a doorway that they can just walk right in if they need to. But most of the time, those doorways cannot save them. You know, we don't lock them up. They can't save them from a bear or something, because a bear could walk right through the door.
Right.
It's just open. But most bears are deterred by our livestock guardian dogs, which do not eat the animals. They just live with them and sleep with the sheep and the cow, and they're all assigned different animals and different jobs, and they just do it. We just see what they're best with, and we just put them with it, and they love it. You know, our shop girl, Amaya, she went and washed the dogs, and then the next day they were black. They're Pyrenees, Great Pyrenees, so they're white dogs, but then the next day they were black because they just wanted to sleep in a, you know, just roll around in the mud and sleep in the dog house and get filthy again. They didn't care. They were like, ugh, why'd you wash me? I was fine the way I, where's my protective layer?
Well, it sounds like the animals have a really good time on your farm.
Yes. I would like to talk about the smell a little bit. What do you smell while you're up here?
I mean,
does it smell like animal feces?
To me, it doesn't. Right where I'm sitting right now, I'm not smelling anything bad or good. It just smells pretty neutral.
Yeah, so that's the thing. If you roll up to a farm and they're like, oh, it smells terrible, that means they're not doing good land management usually with the animals. They're not being moved enough. We had somebody from the paper come out and talk to us, and he's like, well, can I go to the farm that has the animals on it? And I'm like, you're on the farm that has the animals on it. And he was like, no way. And then he saw the thousands of animals, and he's like, wait, how... Wait, what?
I couldn't even tell.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that that's important, because you can see, you know, that they're being treated well. And even that the pasture is being treated well. You can look and see that there's, it's not just bare soil or...
So maybe on that note, you could tell us a little bit. You guys process your own chickens.
Yes. So we are state certified and USDA certified to process our own chickens on property.
So those are processed right here. And yep, those are also creating jobs for local people,
yes,
who are
so
helping you process them.
When we were in between places to move, last summer when we were moving, we did hire out for one time. We did take them to a processing facility. We were very unhappy with that situation. First of all, I feel like if you raise that bird from a day old and you love and respect it, then you need to be doing the killing yourself. We would do the same for our pigs, except for we're not legally allowed to do that and then resell them. it's just very important to us. And then when we decided to do such a large scale of birds, we were shooting for 5,500 or more this year. When we started to do that, we talked about how it's a pandemic and a lot of people are out of jobs. So we spoke with several people that were interested, and we had lots of people try it, and that was not their thing, and that's okay. We do kill them the kosher or halal way, where it's like very humane, and we do process them and bag them and tag them here ourselves and then sell them in the store that's on property as well. But with that, we were able to create jobs during the pandemic, so that people, and a lot of those people, like one guy works for us almost full time and not just on those days. And then two of the other ladies work, do it filling in chores and things like that when things need to be done, like farmhand work. So I think it's worked out really well. It's helped us while we're growing, and I think it's helping people while there's a pandemic going on.
Yeah, and since you brought up the pandemic, I think it would be worth to mention all the awesome things you've been doing for our community with feeding the children, and really, I mean, not just the children, but anyone that shows up and
right.
takes some food.
So, when this first started, you know, my kids homeschool, so I don't, and we're lower income, but we never have to worry about food insecurity. When I was growing up, there were four children, and my parents both worked, but it was always tight, and we were not greatly food insecure. But like if my dad got laid off or something, we would be a little like, okay, well, we're eating a lot of rice and beans. And, you know, luckily my mother knew how to cook for that kind of thing, but we were still, I didn't eat Twinkies and Coke and I wasn't allowed. And so, which is probably why I got into that business as an adult and got sick, because I didn't know that those options were out there as a child. But me having been a little food insecure, you know, it really is a soft spot in my heart. But then also my husband was like, well, if the kids aren't going to be in school for 2 weeks, maybe we should offer like a snack or and a drink or something. If kids show up in the car, we'll just hand it to them. And I said, well, if we're going to do that, maybe we should be a little more generous, and we should do like, he's the idea man, and I'm the logistics. That's what we say. He comes up with the ideas. He's got the brain for the ideas, and I implement them. And I was like, you know, there's a lot of people who are without work that would love to volunteer and would love to. I said, I bet I can get a few people just out here for 2 weeks to volunteer, and we could make them whole lunches. So we were going to go with hot dogs, peanut butter and jelly, cheese sandwiches. That comes with a yogurt or a gummy. You get a drink, you get chips, you get cookies. And we had several local cookie companies make us cookies every day, like fresh, for like 3 months. We had that going on. And then just a ton of other food ideas. And then I got with Gail and Shane and Barbara, and we talked about maybe we should have Hunger Coalition boxes. And I would just, so basically you can just pull up to the farm Wednesday through Saturday, 11 to 6. And we ask you, are you here to shop or for a lunch? We're social distancing, we're wearing a mask. And you tell me you're here for lunch, and I ask you, is there food in the house? If there's not food in the house, or is there enough food in the house? We'll bring you a bag, no questions asked. I don't care if you're pulling up in a Maserati. I don't know your situation. I don't ask anything. We just pack a bag of veggies or a box of veggies, and we pack a baggie of non-perishable items and send it to them, and then they get their meals. And I've had people ask for 15 hot dogs. That's what we did. We just packed up 50. I don't care, because I can always send someone to the store. And we found people that donate, and you know, people that can volunteer. And some of that's wound down some now that it's not, as my husband calls it, cool and sexy anymore. When people think it's not a need, but it still is a need. I've yet to have a day where no one has shown up. And even on days where it's been really low counts of people, people have still asked for bags of groceries.
There's still a need.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think just from, you know, my work with the Hunger Coalition, we've noticed that the demand hasn't. I mean, it has decreased a little, but it hasn't. It's still pretty much the same numbers as post.
And so we thought we'd just do it 2 weeks, and then we thought maybe we'd do it till June. And then we were like, well, I guess it's still going. Maybe we'll do it until August, and then school starting. Well, the thing about school is that that's great, but a lot of parents that were going to return to work, say you have a two-income household and then one parent had to stay at home with kids, there is a specific situation I'm talking about. This person could not return to work because their kids are now on opposite schedules at two separate schools, and she's like, how am I gonna go? So I'm like, just bring the kid, whichever kid you have that day, bring it for a lunch. The school system is doing a wonderful job though of keeping food out there for kids as well. But the days have been a little different. They were originally going, So we just felt like we should just keep going because they stopped feeding. They started feeding Monday through Thursday, and we're doing Wednesday through Saturday. And so we'll just keep going until there's not a need for kids. Well, that, and as long as there's donation money and volunteers. I mean, but so far everything's been happening and falling into place. Amaya went and watered and got eggs.
Are you going to make an appearance on our podcast?
No.
That was Farmer Jay in the background.
No.
He is not as vocal as I am.
I don't think you guys would have gotten to this place without your
vocality
to market.
I'm the face of Roosterhead. He's the physical labor of Roosterhead.
That's pretty much what my husband says too. You know, he's like, I'm the pack man.
And the children.
Well, did you see he's on? Oh, Lord.
Oh, God. Don't run into any cars. Okay.
Okay, so I'm sure they'll edit this and make it sound good.
I sound fantastic on this.
You sound amazing. Yeah,
thank
for
you.
Sure. Okay, so one last thing. Well, maybe not the last thing, but...
what is this?
I had a question here about how your practices impact our neighbors in the community, but I really feel like we've talked about all of that. You know, you've provided
jobs. Feeding them and providing jobs.
What you're doing isn't running a bunch of, I want to say...
pesticides, and we don't use any of that stuff, so it's not running into our water systems, polluting our airways. We're not, we don't usually have animals break loose except for Hermes the sheep and tear up people's yards or anything. He didn't do that, he just went on a walkabout. But
for me, it's pretty important that we just as myself personally, I think it's really important to keep chemicals out of our water system, especially living somewhere like we do here. And I mean, that's why I make the products I make, you know, and I think that's a big part of what makes me want to support you guys. It's like, I believe in what you guys are doing.
That's actually how I got my tumors on my parathyroid, was Gen X water in Brunswick County and New Hanover County. So
where is that?
That's on the coast. And that's on the coast, and they had some factories dumping chemicals. Now, people are allowed to dump into your waterways just up to a certain percentage.
Which is crazy.
Yes, and I'm not sure what the percentage was, but I do know that they have the worst water in the entire state. And I would drink out of the tap, per usual, and make tea or make lemonade or make my coffee,
right.
These sort of things, not knowing. And I started noticing in 2006 that my mother-in-law got Hashimoto's on her thyroid. My neighbor had her entire thyroid removed for Hashimoto's. My other neighbor had her thyroid, half of her thyroid removed for Hashimoto's. And then I got 4 tumors on my parathyroid, which means that I could never, without having this removed, I will never be skinny. That's not a reality. It really messed with my whole endocrine system, which in 2008, when I got diabetes, that just doubled it. It was just, so it's important to us that, you know, there is clean drinking water. We live in one of the best areas for water, and it'd be great if we could continue to use it. And people don't realize we have several neighbors who do honest farming and good work.
we just don't agree with certain types of farming, but that does not mean that we think that it's less or, and it's what you've been taught. And it's
I agree. I think there's also just like a lack of education. About right. Something you've been doing this your whole life. So why would you change your practices now?
Well, Big Ag is supported by companies that have the pesticides and the fertilizers and things that cause the, you know, when you plant something large like soy or corn and you don't rotate three or four different types of crops, soy does add nutrients to the land. Corn does add nutrients. But it becomes, if you continue to run just those items on there, they have to build these genetically modified things to like seeds and, you know, spray these pesticides to keep it going on that same piece of land to support the idea that you bought that tractor for a certain dollar amount and you have to, well, I have the tractor and you're in debt to this company, so you have to do it. And I get that, and that is hard. But also remember, when it rains, it runs into Lambs Creek, the French Broad. It's running into those things, you know, which is where people, you know, swim, play, hang out, fish, and also the air. We are in the river valley, so we get a ton of wind. I mean, it's very windy in this spot. And if you spray, like say I just planted a whole bunch of corn and I sprayed it, it would blow all over this land into our neighbors and to kids' houses. We're right on the bike path. We have Oscar Blues here. It's like, it would definitely, you know,
it spreads like it's in the air.
It just goes everywhere. So, yes. So it's just, you know, and we're surrounded by that on this piece of property. But we're trying to do our part by having no spray, you know, and it's a lot of work. I had to hire a guy that essentially he weeds most of the time because we don't spray.
Don't, yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But well, next again, year that's he'll providing do a job, you
right.
know?
It's very distracting. Farmer Jay's up here with a turkey.
Yeah, and because he's doing that, it's making me think about a question that's totally out of the contest.
No, okay.
So hopefully, you know, they can like edit this to make it sound better. But did you guys have any like farming experience pre-starting?
No, we're actually suburbanites. My husband was born here in Brevard. Oh my God, is that Jared Michael? Jared.
Do you not like the turkeys, Jackie?
Well, I don't want to...
It's a pretty big bird. Oh, the turkey has something to say.
What are you trying to say, little guy? Oh, okay. I know, is it hard to stand up there? I'm sorry. So my husband was born and raised here for part of his life, and then he moved to Winston-Salem and lived in, you know, inside Winston-Salem, and then he moved to the coast. That's where we met. And I thought, and he thought growing up, that if you wanted to be a farmer, you just had to have a little garden and you could have a little garden tractor, but you had to be born into a farm family, because that's like what we thought in school and reading and books and things. People came from farming families, and our families didn't farm, so we didn't have any clue. But when I got so sick and he was trying to, you know, stay in shape and things like that, we just started watching YouTube. And then we thought, well, all these people are backyard farming. We could definitely have like 10 chickens in the yard and they could like eat the ticks. Well, maybe we have 10 chickens, but maybe we could get like 8 more so that we can have enough eggs. Let's get 132 birds because we've got several neighbors. It's called chicken math. And then it gets out of hand real quick, because then you're like, and also, we could maybe raise some pigs in this unused forest part of our land. And the pigs loved it, and we loved them. Bacon and Beans, that was our first set of pigs. That's what their names were. I know it sounds mean. It's really not, though. We always say they only have to have one bad day. And they're going to die anyways. And it should... Our feeling is that you should honor and respect that animal, and that you should use their body to nourish yours. You have the DNA and the teeth set and the stomach acid to eat proteins from animals. There has to be a reasoning for that. And I feel like you should be just as grateful to cut a tomato off of a vine and eat that. That's a living thing. And plants, in my opinion, have feelings. from what I can read. You know, they grow better with music. They're happier with me. You know, it's like, it's very important to us that people understand that we don't just look at these things as a product. This is not a product to me. This was a living being that gave up its life to sustain others. And the idea that we can feed people in our community with food that was well-loved is fantastic.
I think that's a really good point. You know, for me, I think I would maybe kind of consider myself as a person who likes to take as little as possible and just be kind of like a minimalist in that department. So I think a good point for my family and myself, maybe I should just speak for myself, but it has been a good comparison for us to say, okay, so if we're purchasing a soy product that comes from I don't know where or who's making it or where it's being made or
and there's
how
a lot of greenwashing with
and
that going on.
In a plastic
on.
Container.
Yep.
What I'm taking and how much it's traveling. I mean, there's so many layers to it.
And what they're paying those people that are being
there's
that
so
traveling.
Many layers to it that are. If I'm really trying to use a minimalist approach, if I come to you, which I live right down the street, and I'm able to purchase an animal that you have loved and it has grown on just your land without having to take excessive amounts of feed or anything from anyone else.
And we use a local feed mill, by the way, and we travel to pick it up. We don't pay someone to do that. We do that ourselves. And we feel it's important. And the people that we use some sort of waste products, like from peanut. They use the peanuts that are shell, like, you know, the residual that's left over at the end of the day from peanut places and stuff like that. So they're trying to be resourceful, and we're trying to be resourceful and use local products that they've grown themselves.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
That's, but I think that's
seems,
important.
Yeah, it seems like it all just, it feels closer to home. You know, it feels closer to home to get, even if the product is an animal product. I think that's the way as a former vegan for 4 years, having a connection with you, which, I mean, I came up here, I don't even know how we started becoming friends, but it's been so interesting to switch my eating ideals because in other places I've lived, I didn't have access to knowing
or
my
to
farmer
see.
Or knowing someone who had chickens.
Right. And because we work in this industry, we can see so many different things that other people don't get to see. So if you get, what's I trying to say here? It's not just about meat, vegetables as well. If you're paying, it's really boiling down to greenwashing. So there's a lot of things that people don't understand. When you buy a chicken that says it's antibiotic free, that means that 3 days before they processed it, I'm not sure about the date because each state is a little bit different. I think that it's 3 to 10 days, somewhere around there. That means that they stopped giving them any kind of thing with medication in it 3 days before they were processed.
It doesn't necessarily mean they were not.
If you buy an organic cage-free egg, that is not what that means.
So isn't the difference between free range and cage free just that they aren't actually locked in the cage?
Both are greenwashing terms. So free range means that they have a man door. That means they do not have to open the man door legally. And that door is for a man to come in or a woman.
Not a chicken to open.
Not a chicken. Now some people do the right thing and they put it out there. So that's, you know, they open the door and let the chickens go, and that's great.
Do you know of any companies
that
sell at the grocery store that actually do that?
I know some that sell. Yes, I know some people that sell in another state, and they claim that their product is organic. It's organic because they're feeding it organic feed from several states away, which means that they're paying, you know, when you buy that, it's not local. They're not eating local. And then they also don't pay their truck drivers very well. And then you're also having emissions into the air from the fuel and from the trucks coming and going. And then you personally will never set eyes on where that corn or soy or pea is being grown. And that's a little disturbing to me. We do sometimes have to buy traditional hog feed to supply them with hog feed in the winter. And it is hard to not try to buy something that's, I mean, it's a bad broken system. You know, we are guilty of it too sometimes when you have to buy what you can get or if they're out of your feed. Yeah.
But on the bright side, it's like you're very open about what
right.
you do. Like,
and we'll show anybody our feed anytime. You can come and look right now. It's sitting out in the open on a trailer and we cover it with a tarp. You can come and look any day you want and you can actually physically see what's in it. But also back to cage-free. Cage-free just means that there are not cages inside of that barn, but that does not mean that they're not standing on their own poop.
This would make an entire other podcast talking about,
yes, I have a whole bunch about greenwashing because... I mean, I tell people, don't trust something with a sun and beautiful pastures and a barn on the label or Sunny Happy Farms or, you know, something like that. When you do things like that, that company is probably hiding behind that and using that as a marketing technique. It doesn't mean that they're all bad, obviously. But when I hear that you can buy, our first year farming professionally, we're at this farmer's market. We were trying desperately to sell a chicken. A woman came up and told me, $4 a pound for this chicken, this pasture-raised chicken, $4 a pound. She was flabbergasted. She could not believe it because she can go to Earth Fair and get her chicken for $1 a pound on Wednesdays. So I went to Earth Fair. And I bought one of those chickens, and I read where the farm was from. I Googled it. It was a sub company of a parent company of Tyson. which is okay. That's fine. Tyson has a good business, but that's not the business that I'm in. And, you know, they sell a lot more chicken than I do. But it's not what we're doing. We're not out to feed the world. I had someone say to me, you know, well, you can't feed the world with this type of farming. We're not trying to feed the world.
Yes.
And by the way, that person, they farm and they make dog food for a living. So I was like, you're not feeding the world either. It's okay. But it's these things that you're not told. When you buy a smart chicken, or whatever they're called, sustainable or smarter, it's some S word. When you buy one of those chickens, they're raised in a barn, and that's okay, but you're saying when you put your dollar to that, you're saying that that kind of farming is okay. And guess what? My family has been wanting to eat chicken every day this month, and I am out of chicken, so my family is not eating chicken, and we would love to eat one of our own birds, but we just don't have them available right now. And that's hard. You know, sometimes I go, I really want to make homemade pancakes. Well, I don't end up doing that because I'm out of eggs or because we are letting nature take its course. I got 149 eggs the other day. Now I'm down to 38. They just got stressed with the rain. And guess what? It'll be back later.
Well, I feel the same way about our family too. Like, if you don't have it, we don't eat it.
Yeah.
It's no just pressure.
Like, no, great. Just sweating a little bit. Did you hear her threaten me, guys? No. But that's the thing. Like, and we want our neighbors to eat well. And we also, during this pandemic, so North Carolina sends out a meat scale. Basically, it's like a money thing. It's a chart that tells you what you should sell your meat for based off of what everyone else is selling for. The meat right now, whole pasture birds are seven something a pound. We are selling them still for $5 because this is a pandemic and we are not trying to take advantage of our customers. When I saw that there was a big box store in town and I saw that their produce went up by 20%, I left mine exactly the same. Because yes, I could be making that profit, but this is people never forget how you treated them during a bad time. And that's, I don't want to be known for raising the prices when a lot of my friends don't have jobs.
Well, you know? I think that's a pretty, I think that's cool. I remember Jay made a statement about that too. So I'd say that's probably a pretty fun
business card.
Go get my books. That could be a good ending to our podcast, I think, you know? That's a good point.
Well, I'm up for any other podcast.
Yeah, well, I mean, you made my job super easy because you definitely know what you're talking about and are making some good points that I think actually.
And by the way, I support all kinds of farming. I think that farming is very hard no matter what, but you know, I do think regenerative ag is the way to go, and it's, you know, best for all peoples involved.
And it seems to be the less wasteful way to go, too. Thank you so much, Jackie. I really appreciate your time. And why don't you tell people real quick about where they can find you and how they can purchase your CSAs and your products?
So our website is under construction right now. It's usually roosterheadfarms.com. We have a email address at roosterheadbrevard@gmail.com. We also have a cell phone number. It's 828-702-9929. That goes directly to me. You can Facebook, Instagram. We're on TikTok as Roosterhead Farm Store. Instagram, it's Roosterhead Farms. Facebook, Roosterhead Farms. So just pop on there. If you message us, it goes directly to our phone. So no worries about that. And I usually get back to you very quickly. Our response time is fast because it's always on me. So
awesome. So yeah.
Oh, and we have a store located at 1200 Old Hendersonville Highway across the street from Oscar Blues.
And she will take all of your containers back.
We do. We recycle. Yeah, we take Greenheart juice containers back. We take back egg cartons. We sell Mallory and Josh Carter's Myrtle milk for pet use. We take back any glass, any egg cartons. If you have some egg cartons that are not ours, we would request that you give them to Sharing House, as they are always in need of egg cartons. So we do request that. But we also take used bags, like plastic bags, because we need them for the store. So
perfect. You know? Yeah, that's awesome. Okay, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. For more information, visit movingtoconservers.com. Our theme song is Gutalele's Happy Place by Stephen Kartenberg.